It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. Thank you for listening. I hope you're enjoying this very fall-like day if you're here in where we're experiencing autumn. I'm in New York City right now, and it's November 2nd. Do you know what yesterday was? Yesterday was World Vegan Day. So October 1st is World Vegetarian Day, and all of the month of October, in addition to being Breast Cancer Awareness Month, it's also Vegetarian Awareness Month. I would prefer to focus on the vegetarian thing than the breast cancer awareness thing, but moving on, November is Vegan Awareness Month or World Vegan Month or something like that. Anyway, it's worth celebrating and learning more about. So today we have some really interesting guests, lots of things to think about, and I want to bring my first guest on, Deborah Merlin. Her mission was to become an advocate for her special needs twins. Medical professionals only offered drugs. She sought alternative methods, did extensive ADHD and other health-related research, and kept impeccable records. In 1993, she co-chaired the Westside Cities Council to help promote Public Law 99457, Part H, to implement early intervention services from birth through 3 years of age for children at risk. In 1990 and 1991, she coordinated outreach to pediatricians under Public Law 99457 Part H and coordinated presentations at hospitals to educate pediatricians on early intervention services and resources for children at risk from infancy to 3 years of age. She is a frequent guest on radio shows throughout the United States and Canada. She is a consultant to parents who need support, provides resources regarding their children's individual needs, and she is an artist. Welcome to It's All About Food, Deborah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, Karen.
Yeah. Well, I read your story, Victory Over ADHD, mm-hmm. and my heart was breaking the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
In between screaming.
It was quite a journey.
Quite a journey, and it seems so unnecessary, and it's so important that you're getting this information out, and I just think of the people that don't have this information and are still going through what you went through.
And this is one of the reasons why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
It's a journey, and it took many years to figure out what the best things were for treating their symptoms. And as I was doing my research and even writing my first book, I realized that I didn't know everything,
mm-hmm.
and I continued, and I still to this day am always learning more resources to share with parents, so it keeps on going.
Well, the good news is today in 2011 that we have the internet, and
yes.
Probably when you were just getting into this,
it
the information
there.
Wasn't,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, which probably made my journey a little longer,
mm-hmm.
but even with the internet, I'm surprised about how many parents still don't know what's causing their children's symptoms.
Yeah, they don't know or they don't want to know. Because as you, even though you learn things that helped your children, a lot of it, applying some of that knowledge wasn't easy.
That's true. But there are great tips that I can share for that. For example, with a diet. And I was the poster mother who did everything wrong when my kids were young. And they were both picky eaters, and they were very small for their age. They were skinny. And at this point, I was just trying to get them to eat anything.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah. A lot of parents do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd read the cereal boxes, and it would say, fortify with vitamins, but those are synthetic vitamins, not real vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
and in the cereal, there's also a lot of artificial food coloring and sugars and wheat, which all contribute to ADHD symptoms, particularly the hyperactivity.
Okay, so let's just back up a little bit. You were pregnant and
yes.
with twins, and they were born early.
Yeah, they were born 10 weeks early.
10 weeks early, and you had a difficult time the last 3 weeks or so before they were born.
Yes, I was in the hospital at strict bed rest. I went into early labor at 27 weeks. And so by the time I got to the hospital, I was already 1 centimeter dilated. And one of the twins was 90% of face, which means he was ready to come out. So I had to, I could not even get up to go to the bathroom. They had to put a catheter in me. And I had to lay in a bed that was where the back of the bed was lowered, so my head was down, lowered.
Mm-hmm.
To keep
Very
him.
Comfortable.
No, it wasn't. But it was worth it. Because I was able to carry them 3 more weeks.
Which really makes a significant difference
you bet.
In their development and their potential intelligence.
Absolutely. But it's still too soon.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is ADHD? It stands for?
Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And there's ADD without the hyperactivity.
Right. And a lot of people throw these things out and say they have it or their kids have it, and
you know, they probably do.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I grew up in New Jersey in the 50s and 60s and early 70s when the pesticide DDT was being sprayed.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually blogged about this on my website because I grew up with ADD. I had such a hard time focusing in class, and I think there were 2 contributing factors. I had many amalgam fillings in my mouth. And also, the pesticide DDT has been linked to neurological disorders.
Yep.
So I was particularly sensitive to both. I was outside a lot as a young girl, so I was always being exposed to DDT.
Well, a lot of things have changed since
yes.
the end of World War II, when the chemical industry was really growing and developing, and they changed their focus from creating things that killed people, directly killed people,
right.
to creating things that were supposed to help us, but in the end really do harm us. And a lot of their focus was put into things like pesticides, herbicides, and
right.
food.
Right.
And yes. We're now really starting to see, after several generations, what kind of horrible impact it's doing to our health.
Yes, and I'm surprised that the FDA hasn't taken more action as far as the food we're eating
yeah.
with the artificial food coloring. And
yeah, well, unfortunately, it's linked to a lot of money.
Yes.
So
yes.
they don't move very quickly in our best interest. But that's why your book and your story is so important, because people are responsible for their own actions. And whether or not the government approves things, we need to know what we're putting in our bodies.
That's right.
We need to know about our food and make informed, responsible choices.
Yeah.
So your twins were born, and you went through as from baby to toddler to young children to teenagers to adults, a whole journey of challenges.
Yes.
So they were born, and right away you had problems with one of them.
Yes, he as I said, they were 10 weeks premature, and one of the twins actually did better than expected, being that premature. But the other twin did not as well, and he had underdeveloped lungs, which resulted in hyaline membrane disease.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the NICU for 4 months. He was on a ventilator for a month and then on oxygen for a couple months before they weaned him off the oxygen. But he was labeled failure to thrive. So when we brought him home, he was failing to thrive. He would not take milk. I was pumping my breast milk at that point because they weren't their sucking reflexes weren't that great.
Right.
And I didn't know how much milk they were getting. So the only way I could measure it was pump my breast milk, put it in a bottle, and feed them. And And he was only taking like 8 ounces a day and then throwing it up. So he was readmitted to the hospital 4 times after he was released. We finally hired a nursing agency to come in at night to gavage feed him, where they put a, insert a tube through his nose down to his stomach.
Yeah, I've seen that done. It's really unpleasant.
Yeah, and it was particularly unpleasant for him because the first nursing agency was gavaging him with adult-sized feeding tubes.
Now, this is one of the spots in the book where I'm screaming. And
yeah.
You know, the medical community, we can't live with them. We can't live without them.
Yes.
They certainly do tremendous things. Your children probably wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the medical community.
Absolutely.
And yet, yet there are so many things that you say, what are you thinking?
But fortunately, the very last time we had to hospitalize him, the nurse who was working with him was also having a hard time feeding him.
Mm-hmm.
And she handed me a card of a nurse who specializes in high-risk infant care. And we hired her immediately. And the very first night she came to our house, she switched the feeding tubes from adult to infant.
Yeah.
And for the very first time in his life, the next morning he woke up smiling.
Yeah, amazing. You know? Such a subtle little thing to make all the difference.
Yes. The adult-sized tubes were actually trapping air in his stomach and causing major discomfort.
Wow.
So he'd wake up very cranky every day. So. Yeah, that was just the beginning.
That was just the beginning, right.
Yeah.
So you've had just countless challenges with doctors and also with the schools. So the doctors, many of them, just want to give children medication.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's all they know. That's what they learn in medical school.
And this was happening in the 90s, the early 90s that
yes.
you began this journey, and I remember John Robbins coming out with a book, Reclaiming Our Health. Did you happen to read that at the time, or
no.
were you aware of that book?
No, I was aware of nothing
yeah.
at the time. I was so consumed with just them surviving
yeah.
and meeting their needs, and I left my job to raise them, and it was overwhelming, just, you know, having 2 special needs children. But I was also fortunate because the right people showed up at the right time
mm-hmm.
to help me. So I did have help along the way. But it wasn't just their ADHD symptoms. It was asthma. It was food allergies. It was facial tics. It was irritability. It was a violent temper with no impulse control. I was dealing with all these different symptoms.
But aren't they all related?
Yes.
And they seem like different issues, but they all come down to what the children are putting in their bodies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so what, I know you discovered different things at different times, but what were things that you removed from their diet and what did you add to their diet?
That was the first part of my journey is and if you notice, a lot of ADHD kids have big circles under their eyes. They
mm-hmm.
tend to be allergic. And one of my twins had frequent ear infections, and he had constant fluid buildup in his ears. And I was taking him to an allergist, and they were getting environmental allergy shots twice a week.
Mm.
But she was always concerned that there was always fluid in his ears. So I was told about this Chinese doctor. And I told her I was going to take them to a Chinese doctor, and she warned me, you know, you have to be careful with all these alternative doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So I took them, and the first thing he did was take my son off of milk. And he took both of them off of dairy
mm-hmm.
immediately. And it was so interesting because he had the autism label hovering over him as well as ADHD. And it turns out that the fluid in his ears were making it so he couldn't hear properly, which was making him appear autistic.
Right.
And as soon as the milk was removed, well, within a month, I took him back to the allergist, and the fluid was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And his symptoms disappeared. He became much more social. He was feeling great. He wasn't underwater anymore, so.
Well, what's interesting is there's a lot of knowledge with herbal medicine from the Chinese, and what's unfortunate is they are picking up a lot of our habits, and where they never consume dairy. The dairy industry is growing quite a bit over in China. So as we're slowly learning what it does to us, they're decades behind us.
That's true. And dairy has been linked to many diseases, such as cancer. And so we have to really become aware and actually do our own research. You know, go to Google and type diseases associated with dairy. You'd be shocked to see how many diseases are linked to dairy.
There's a lot of them.
And I work a lot with mothers and some dads, but mostly moms who have kids with ADHD. And so many of their kids had frequent ear infections. It's the dairy.
Yeah, it's not just kids with ADHD. It's a lot of children have ear infections, and doctors come up with shots and tubes in the ear.
Mm-hmm. Well, my doctor, my pediatrician, prescribed antibiotics.
Yeah.
So my kids were getting antibiotics for a dairy allergy. I mean, how dumb is that?
Mm-hmm.
And so from that resulted an overgrowth of yeast in their body. So they had gut issues, too. So one thing led to another. But I actually think what really began it all, of course, the prematurity, you would expect to be some delays.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably should have not gotten the vaccinations, because the baby's immune system is so immature anyway. It's not developed yet. But premature kids are more at risk for developing adverse reactions to the vaccinations. And I was always blaming everything on their prematurity, including their food allergies. But it turns out vaccines have also been linked to food allergies.
Right. So you didn't know this, I guess, in the beginning, and you just let the doctors give whatever vaccinations they wanted to. Did you have any?
I was totally clueless.
Yeah.
And another thing I have learned since is Tylenol, which is routinely given with the vaccinations so the kids don't run fevers, actually inhibits the liver from making glutathione, which detoxes from the heavy metals.
Oh, good.
And it's actually the Tylenol that can be triggering, like the autism and ADHD epidemic.
Wow, now that I never heard of.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
There's a lot of information coming out about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also a contributing factor. And if the kids are running fevers, I was told by a naturopath doctor just this past weekend that it's better for them to have the fever because they're fighting something off. They're fighting an infection off.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. There's a lot of things that our body does to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Sweats and has fever, a variety of things, even a runny nose or whatever. Sometimes it's better just to let it do its thing because it's just clearing its vitality.
Yes. I recently learned about a man who his Lyme disease was cured by running a very high fever when he got sick with pneumonia. He almost died.
Mm-hmm.
And when he recovered, the Lyme disease was gone.
Yeah, I've heard stories about really high fever killing off different problems people have had. There are a variety of different heat therapies, too, that people can look into, a whole other subject.
Yeah. Well, and actually, it's interesting you mentioned that. Infrared saunas are very effective for detoxing.
Mm-hmm.
So and these kids tend to be toxic. Matter of fact, 20% of the kids in the United States who have ADHD actually have heavy metal toxicity, well, lead toxicity. Specifically, so when kids are showing up with these symptoms, they automatically should be tested for lead toxicity.
Hmm.
And it's easy enough to treat, to remove from the body. So, and of course, the mercury and cadmium are two other common heavy metals that show up with these kids.
There are so many different things that happen, and they all... one thing may happen because of the other, and then they all add to the pool of problems.
Yes.
So you have the prematurity, and then there were all of these other things that came into play because, unfortunately, what the children were being fed, and it confused the issue. And then also just, some of the things that children will do when they have autistic symptoms or similar is they'll chew on their toys.
Yes, and that's...
And what's in those toys
right.
that they're
yeah.
chewing on?
Especially 20 years ago, and even more recently.
Mm-hmm.
And all these toys are made in China.
Yeah.
So they're chewing on lead.
Yeah.
And plastic, which has a BPA chemical.
Right.
So, yeah, that's true. There's many things we need to look at.
You really have to constantly be out of the box and don't take
yeah.
anything for granted.
Yeah. And I'm sure your listeners, because they're listening to your show, are
mm-hmm.
already thinking outside the box.
Yeah,
probably
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. But so as we went along the journey, as one of the twins, the one who was sick in the NICU, when as he was getting older, his symptoms were getting worse. His facial tics were getting very severe, and
mm.
he was developing a very violent temper with no impulse control.
Mm.
And at this point, I guess he was 10, 11 years old, and I went to see my acupuncturist, who happens to be a medical doctor, and I was complaining about my son and his irritability, and he suggested we do a QEEG on him, which is a quantitative computer analysis that measures brain activity,
mm-hmm.
and we found out he was having seizures.
Oh, wow.
We didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So that really brought a lot of information to us.
And did you know was there a way to reduce those seizures?
Yes, or? Yes. But what probably caused them, seriously, were the vaccinations.
Mm.
And so, and they weren't seizures like the grand mal where you fold down and swallow your tongue. They're very subtle. The doctor described it as football players running at all different speeds in his,
yeah.
that's how his brain was moving, which can cause a lot of irritability.
Right.
My doctor, when he got the results, he didn't want it to prescribe anti-seizure medicine, because that also has a lot of side effects, including death. So he ordered an amino acid panel, and we found out his amino acids were really low. Within a few days of supplementing him with amino acids, all his symptoms vanished.
Is that crazy?
Everything.
Amino acids, building blocks of protein.
No more facial tics, and I'm telling you, his facial tics were bad. No more violent temper.
Wow.
His grades went from failing to A's and B's in a month.
Mhm.
It just blew me away, and that's really why I wrote the book, because who would know? And I started asking people, do you know what amino acids are? And no one. I mean, a couple of smarter people would say, well, they're the building blocks of life, but
right.
beyond that, they couldn't tell you, or they knew even the doctors.
Now, were these, or do you know, were some of these the essential amino acids that our body can't manufacture ourselves, or
both,
were these
both.
Some?
They were,
or they
both.
Were both.
They were both. I mean, his the whole panel was low.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the other twin test it, and myself, and we were lower than he was. So, but for some reason, it was just showing up in him differently. But I could not believe what impact it had on me and how better I felt once I started taking
now,
it.
So you started supplementing,
mm-hmm.
I imagine,
yes.
with amino acids.
Right.
But what about the diet?
Well, I had actually had already made great strides in correcting the diet before that.
Mm-hmm.
When they were 6, 7, they're off the dairy and off the artificial food coloring. But what was interesting, when we had just moved and we were at the market and it was hot out, so one of my sons talked me into buying the multicolored popsicles. And wow, was that a rude awakening.
Red number, yellow number,
oh,
blue number.
Oh, God, the worst ingredients. They were climbing the walls by the time they were halfway done with the popsicles.
Aww.
I grabbed them, I threw the whole box away. I said, never. But if that were me now, I would have taken that box back to the supermarket
yeah.
and demand my money back.
Or told them not to sell that to children.
Oh, it's
and you know how yeah. crazy that is? I don't know if you've made your own popsicles or you can buy them in health food stores, but how hard is it to just freeze fruit juice? You know, they're great
right,
colors.
Right, right. You can just take organic fruit juice and freeze it.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I like to take ripe melons like honeydew or cantaloupe and put it in a blender and then freeze that in a popsicle stick.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Oh,
actually.
My God. That's so good because it gives it a little more heft, a little more chew.
Yeah. But again, you know, I appreciated all these lessons because I learned so much and I'm able to help other parents. And I still see parents in the market, you know, buying all these artificial food coloring cereals and cookies, and their kids are running up and down the aisles just like my kids used to.
Right.
It's still happening.
Do you talk to them without, when they don't ask questions?
That's such a good question because I was at a supermarket last year and that happened where the woman behind me was hastily putting all her groceries on the conveyor belt, and she just complains to the cashier, "I'll be right back. I have to go get my son. He never listens to me." And she had 3 boxes of cereal with artificial food coloring.
Yep.
She had animal crackers with the artificial food icing with sprinkles and candy. And I looked at the cashier, and I said, "He can't listen to her. His brain is starving."
Yeah.
And she says, "Well, you should tell her. And I said, "No, I can't because my husband tells me not to processize." But what I did is I wrote an article on it and I had it published because that way I could reach more parents. But in a way, I wish I had talked to her because, but I don't know if she would have listened.
Well, what you're competing with, unfortunately, is millions and millions of dollars that go into marketing to children.
Yes, yeah.
And that it should be outlawed.
Yeah, all those commercials that they're watching with.
And the companies know what they're doing. They specifically market them to children to hook them for life.
Yes, yes. So these kids are eating dead food.
Yeah.
And it, of course, it affects, you know, their brain and how they focus. So just making some major adjustments in the diet can go a long ways in treating their symptoms. But I also think that all these kids should be tested for heavy metal toxicity. And they can do it with a hair clipping. My kids had elevated levels of lead, not an extreme range, but high enough that it could affect their IQ.
Yeah. So how old are your boys now?
They're 22.
And how are they?
They're well. They're, you know, both in college. One is working full-time. He's doing an internship for a movie studio.
Wow.
So they're thriving. They're doing great.
Well, what do they think about the work that you're doing in the book that you wrote?
Well, they're living their own life. When I wrote my first book, when the twins hugged me, said, "I'm really proud of you, Mom." But they're really not focused on that. But they're conscientious about their diets.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah. So that's really helped.
Do you have a website?
Yes, victoryoveradhd.com.
Oh, there we go, victoryoveradhd.com. Deborah, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you, and you're really a courageous woman and a courageous mother, parent, and your kids are lucky to have you. They chose you.
Yeah, they did. I chose them, too. But thank you, Karen. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a very quick break and then get out your wallets. We're going to start talking about what to do with your money with humane investing. We'll be right back. You're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today? Are you ready to talk about money? Well, we're going to just a little bit. But first, I wanted to tell you, you've heard about my new nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, with our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Well, guess what? We were just selected in the Veg News magazine in their current issue, the best of 2011, we are featured as one of the 10 nonprofits you need to know about. Woo-hoo! And we've only been around for 4 months. So I'm really excited about that recognition. And there we go. ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. Check it out. Now, I would like to tell you about my next guest, Brenda A. Morris. She graduated from the College of William and Mary in 1994 after transferring from the University of New Hampshire 2 years earlier when her family moved to Virginia. She spent over a decade in the financial service industry with a large firm in different capacities, though most recently as a financial planner. Over the years, she grew increasingly uncomfortable with the model to which most of the industry still subscribes. When she felt that the clients with whom she enjoyed working with the most often received the least amount of attention, she ventured downtown to coach advisors on the managed money platform and then later to the financial planning team to consult advisors on the investment planning process. During this time, she worked on her certified financial planner designation, all with the hope of making a transition back into a role where she could assist clients directly and quite literally spend her day helping people achieve their hopes and dreams. And in addition to this CFP designation, she has successfully completed the FINRA-sponsored Series 676366 examinations and is insurance licensed. She is a member of the Financial Planning Association and is the treasurer on the board of her association, as well as treasurer of the Richmond Chapter Society of Alumni for the College of William and Mary. As the coordinator of the annual Richmond Vegetarian Festival and an active member of the Vegetarian Society of Richmond, she enjoys meeting and educating people on the virtues of living a healthy, cruelty-free lifestyle. Brenda, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you, Karen.
We don't usually talk about investing. Well, we talk a bit about money from time to time because there's a lot of evil money going around that gets put into marketing of bad products and gets us brainwashed about getting things that aren't good for the environment or healthy for us.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we could invest in companies that we wanted to support and make a little money on in the investment?
It sure is, and I am embarrassed to admit that up until, I think it was 3 years ago, when the president of the Vegetarian Society, who I've known for 20 years, asked me to speak to our group, and she said, do you mind talking about sustainable and responsible investing? At that time, it was socially responsible investing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, Lois, I would love to, but I know nothing about it. So I had just left a big firm. And so when people tell me, oh, I never even put the two together, I'm not taken aback at all, because up until recently, I hadn't either. And I'm embarrassed because my weekends were spent doing advocacy. My life was spent doing advocacy, but I never thought about where our money was being invested at all.
Well, you know, we're all on different journeys. We all come from different life experiences, and when we're ready to move forward with more information, it makes itself apparent, and we see it. So
I couldn't agree more.
The time was right for you.
It was, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey because, like you read in the introduction, thank you for reading that, but I was so upset with the way the industry was going and how I was always fighting a losing battle every day. I remember one of my bosses finally said, you know, you can't turn a ship on a dime, just hang it up with a towel, something to that effect. Give it up, sister. And it was so upsetting, but it was one of the best pieces of advice I ever got, because now I get to work with people who do care, and I mean, those are the only people I work with, is people who do want to make a difference.
Now, I remember, I'm not a big investor, but I do remember learning about socially responsible investing maybe in the 80s. I don't know when it started, maybe 80s, early 90s, something around that time frame. But it was focused primarily on companies that didn't support tobacco industries and military.
Right, and that's really how it started. I mean, even several hundred years ago, religious groups were doing some form of exclusionary screening where they did exactly what you just said. They stayed away from things.
Mm-hmm.
So then in the 60s with the Vietnam War, the president of First Affirmative, the network I belong to, he was there when apartheid ended. And when Nelson Mandela came back, he thanked the shareholders for voicing their opinion, which their shares, in helping to end the apartheid. So that was before my time, and it was just an honor meeting people who were directly involved with that. But you're right, it's been around for a few decades, even though it's just been within the last 3 or 4 years to me that the whole world has opened up. But you're right.
Yeah. So I know that in the vegan and vegetarian world, there are a lot more entrepreneurs and small businesses that are creating planet-friendly, people-friendly, animal-friendly products, and some of them are really doing quite well. Are these the companies that we can get involved with investing in?
I really wish we could. And it's not funny that you ask. It's very appropriate because that was my first thought. And so when I decided I wanted to go this route, I Googled the heck out of anything having to do with vegan investing, and it was very sad because there was very little information out there. One thing I did find is a man up in New York who I finally got to meet in New York City. He's actually probably close to you, was working and is working on what's called the Wide Circle Fund, where he wants to focus on vegan startups.
Mm.
He was having trouble raising capital, and that was one of the things I really wanted to help him with, but he needed accredited investors, people who had over $1 million apiece, and nobody I work with is in that category,
right.
Or a few people are, I should say. So no, it wasn't something that I could write a check for, sadly, but I would love to. And he's still working on it, but it's called the Wide Circle Fund, and that's what his goal is to help vegan startup companies.
Right. Can you spell that?
Sure. Wide Circle.
Wild.
Wide. W-I-D-E.
Okay.
Not thin, but wide.
Okay.
Wide Circle Fund.
Wide Circle Fund.
Yeah, so it was exciting. I met him a couple months ago after having corresponded with him for about a year now. But, I give him a lot of credit for for initiating that. I also spoke with Chris Kerr from the Humane Society to see what their efforts were. And he was working on something similar where they had the whole proposal put together, but they were having trouble raising capital, too, which is sad. But now with all, like you said, so many of them are successful, all the companies that are looking at this lifestyle, hopefully more will jump on board and people will do it, if for no other reason, for the financial results that can potentially come from it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a growing industry and becoming more popular. It's probably one of the few right now that's growing.
It's amazing to me. Isn't it amazing to you? Every day my heart gets warmer when you read something good about people are initiating a meat-free Monday or this or that, and it is. It's amazing. I think we're living in a very exciting time.
So if we wanted to get involved with SRI, socially responsible investing, what does that mean?
Well, it's different to different people. So sustainable, responsible investing can mean exactly what you said earlier, where you look at companies that avoid certain practices. Some people don't want to have anything to do with nuclear. They don't want to have anything to do with military or any arms that are their sole purpose is to harm, tobacco. That's exclusionary, and that's been around, like you said, for a long time. But now there's also positive screening where you reward companies that are doing things in the right direction. And with the vegan industry, that's where I've gone back and forth when what's the best way to approach it, because the analogy I always think of about is McDonald's, and I hate to pick on McDonald's, but I always think if we could get in with McDonald's, we could have more of an impact than if every vegan in the country said, I'm not going to invest in McDonald's. Because if all 1% or 3% of us said, to heck with you, they really could care less. But if we could actually make a difference by investing, and PETA's actually done a good job with this. In order to bring a shareholder resolution to the table, you have to own $2,000 worth of a stock, which $2,000 isn't going to make or break McDonald's, but it can actually, and I keep using them, but they've done this with other companies that are doing bad practices towards animals. They'll raise the issue with them, and now all of a sudden the companies are listening because they don't want PETA or the Humane Society to show up at their meeting and bring this information to light. So a lot of times negotiations will take place before these resolutions get on the table. I've gone a couple years to the Animal Rights Conference, and there I'm trying to encourage young people to start saving. I mean, that's where we're talking basics, because a lot of people there see my table and don't even want to talk to me because they see money and they think money's bad. But I'm trying to tell everyone that, and no offense to people who are doing this, I used to be an angry vegan, but people who are still angry vegans are saying, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with business, corporations, bad, bad, bad. But if you take that approach, you're going to lose some of the impact that you can have, whereas if you're going to have to save for the future anyhow, I mean, pensions are going away, Social Security is, I believe Social Security will be there even when the young people are still around, not
yeah.
the same capacity that it is now, but it will definitely be, it will still be reduced. So we have to take ownership of it. So if people have to save anyways, why not look at companies and support companies that are doing things that we agree with? And you can read a million different studies and you'll get a million different answers, but in the past, people thought that investing in SRI meant you were going to take a hit financially, that you were doing this to feel warm and fuzzy, but you weren't going to necessarily make some money off of it, where I disagree totally, because a lot of times the companies that are doing good actually get rewarded and their employees are happier. So they've actually had studies that have showed that performance long-term will actually be better or can be better if you're investing in companies that care about the people that they're working, that are working with them and care about the people that they're doing business with. So to answer your question about SRI, it can take a number of different avenues. I've decided to focus on the humane investing part just because I see a demand, but I don't see anything out there that's filling that void right now. And I wish there were. I would wish somebody else had done it, and so I didn't have to reinvent the wheel if there was somebody doing it. But I haven't found it, and I tend to find that a lot of vegans in my own circle of friends aren't interested in financial things to begin with. So I hate to be stereotypical, but if there's somebody out there. I found one woman in Australia who was trying to do it, and one guy in New Hampshire and one in Massachusetts. They were both vegetarian and also financial advisors, but they had not thought about using it for
investment
purposes.
Yeah, well, it looks like there's something, somebody needs to start it. Maybe it's you.
Yeah, I don't mind being that conduit. I had I send out emails, and I'm really cheesy, but with my emails I send out any positive things I find. And this week someone emailed me, and she said, what about, what was the company? They were making some awful chemical, and it's in everything. And she educated me, so I looked up the company that manufactures this chemical, and lo and behold, it was actually in, and I don't want to badmouth PAX, but PAX World Fund. Now, PAX is one of the first SRI funds out there.
Right.
They've done a great job,
but
they actually own this company. So I immediately emailed the wholesaler that I know works at this fund. I said, please have an analyst respond to why this is being held. To me, the only reason that could possibly be acceptable is if it's for shareholder advocacy. But I have a bad feeling it's not. And 6 months ago, I called out another company because I was looking at the holdings that are in our various portfolios, and it was 0.001% of was in this Japanese meatpacking company.
Ooh.
And I said, what the heck? And I called them, and I gave them holy heck, too. And they said, out of all the thousands of companies, you're trying to tell me that was the best you could do in an SRI portfolio? And they don't hold it. They didn't hold it after that. I don't know if it had to do with my call or if they had
Absolutely.
Gotten rid of it anyhow. But can you believe that? A Japanese meatpacking company, and they said they had the audacity to say, their standards are different than here. As if that justified it. But
yeah, I don't think so. Well, the message is the same no matter what we're talking about. Anything you buy with your money, whether it's food or whether it's stock or some fund, you need to know everything that's involved. You need to read the fine print and see what it is you're supporting.
And to that point, no, you're absolutely right. But to that point, I feel that that's why so many people don't do it, is because they think there's so much time involved. So I start a page on Facebook, and it's not to promote me. It has nothing to do with me, actually. It's just funds that have their policies out there with regards to animal welfare. So my hope is, and I don't know if it will work, but my hope is that people will be able to tell their advisors across the country, hey, this is what we should be looking at, so that they don't get the same response that I've had clients tell me, where they mention this to advisors and they got glassy eyed, like, what are you talking about? So I would like to be, or in some ways, be a resource, or have other people be resources to me, so that we can pass that information out, because there's so many people out there that do care, but they don't have the time or inclination to find this stuff out. But to your point, it's important. But if we can all, come together and have this way to disseminate this information easier, I think that would be the more efficient way of doing it, so that not everyone's out there banging their head on the wall. Because
the paperwork that we would get if we invested in a fund or something that had a whole portfolio of different companies, do we get the information as to who's in that package, or do we have to ask the company that's brokering this portfolio? Is it like somehow cloaked, or is it hard to get to? Is it easy to find out?
Well, that's a great, great, great question, because most people are working with mutual funds, which is what I work with.
Mm-hmm.
So when you invest in a mutual fund, one single mutual fund, it could have anywhere from 30 holdings up to 1,000 holdings. If it's an index fund like Vanguard or Fidelity, which are great, they hold so many holdings that it would be virtually impossible to go through all of them, but you can. So when you get your when you get your annual report from them and they list all the companies, which they may or may not still hold because the annual reports come out and they're printed and they may have traded since then, the index funds trade less frequently, so there's a better chance that they'll still hold those funds. But it's going to be virtually impossible with some of the actively traded funds to know at any given time unless you contact them to see what they're holding. And Morningstar does a great job of you can go in and look at their top 10 holdings, and then I believe it will go down to 20. So if they have anything in the top 10 or 20 that you could see, and for some of the funds that don't have a lot of holdings, that right there might be the greatest percentage of all that they own. So you can find out that information, but then to look at each individual company within there. So it's easy to find the big ones, the ones like, again, I'll use McDonald's, but if you see that, that's easy to know. But some of the other ones, like the meatpacking company, I didn't know what it was until I looked into it, and it saddened me. But, no, everyone can look it up. Yeah, absolutely. And with the index funds, too, they're going to hold things in there that you and I might not embrace. And then that's where someone has to decide whether or not they want to make an issue of it or not, because an index fund isn't necessarily going to drop something because we don't like it.
Yeah. Sounds like we need a vegan index.
Yeah, and one great, great email I got it was only a few months ago. It was I made a stink within my own network, the Financial Affirmative Network, because these people are great, they're wonderful, and they all want to change the world. But when we went to the conference last year, they had Morningstar and Boca and the Crumbles, but then they also served meat. So I talked to them about that. I said, if you're an environmentalist, how can you still be serving meat? And they responded so favorably, and they do a great job. But now when anything comes up that has to do with humaneness to animals, they will let me know about it. And a few months ago, they told me about a group, and they put together a portfolio for the Best Friends for Animals, and they had a portfolio that warranted hiring an outside manager that was able to do that, just what you said, like an index fund for vegan companies. So I immediately got on the phone all excited, and again, the minimum was $1 million. So when I called, though, this is also warm and fuzzy. He said that so many people had called upon seeing this press release that they are considering putting together a mutual fund, which individual investors could use. But in the meantime, there's a lot of funds out there that are no load, that are SRI, and make sure. Do you think people are you familiar with the term no load?
Why don't you tell me what it means?
Sure. Like when you're buying a fund from, say, Vanguard, Fidelity, any of the big names, you can usually buy it without having to pay a sales charge. But if you use a traditional broker, they usually get paid by making that transaction for you. Mm. So I advise not going through that traditional way of doing it. You can either do it online, or if you're working with someone already, see if they're a certified financial planner, because they have to put your best interests first. And that's different than a broker, because the broker subscribes to a different set of standards. They are required to advise you on something that's suitable, but not necessarily in your best interest.
Well, that's interesting.
So, yeah, it's a distinction that I don't think many people know, but it makes a huge difference. Really, exactly. Exactly. No, but another thing that's good is this, last year was my first year with First Affirmative, and when I went to the conference, I didn't know what to expect, and I set up my table on humane investing at one of our little topic table lunches. And I am a pretty thick-skinned person, so I expected to not have a huge crowd, but I was by myself the entire time. And then when they started running out seats for everybody else, people sat at my table and said, do you mind if I sit here? I have meat. And they giggled. But when I told them what my intent was, they actually said, I'm glad I sat here. You just need a different name. So this past conference last month, I called it, I think it was Environmental Impact of Animal Agriculture, and my table filled. And it was so nice because I got a good group of people that were all interested in, for different reasons, but moving in this direction. So
Isn't that funny what people are afraid of? Oh, gosh. Well, one of the things, I definitely believe that companies can be profitable and not do any harm. And this is definitely the way business has to go in the future, because so many things that we're doing today are not environmentally sustainable, and we just can't continue. Healthcare, we're in this health crisis, and so products need to change. And everything revolves around money. And like you said before, the young folks at some of those conferences, AR conferences, animal rights conferences, kind of don't want to be involved with capitalism. But that's the world we live in. And we definitely need to participate and have a say and support things with the few dollars that we have that we believe in.
Absolutely.
Either in our individual daily purchases or with investing. And you mentioned with PETA and the Humane Society where you have to have $2,000 worth of shares in order to bring something to the table. Is that across the board with all stockholder meetings?
Oh, so PETA and Humane Society take advantage of that fact, but that's with any company. So you or I, if we own $2,000 worth of a stock, we are in a position where we could bring a shareholder resolution to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So PETA and Humane Society have actually been two of the big groups who have used that. Sadly, 2011, they haven't really brought a lot to the table, and I'm not really sure why. I was reading there was a great this is a great website. It's called asyousow.org, but they compile all the resolutions out there, and you can easily look up what's going on with animal welfare. And in the last few years, there were several. And this past year, they said they got very little, what was it, like less than 5% of shareholders voted for the animal welfare practices.
Mm.
So that's why I'm really grateful to you for letting me be on here, because I really want to tell people this is something we all believe in strongly. And even if you're not vegetarian, it doesn't matter. You want humane practices, I hope.
I remember hearing about this a while ago, but I'm glad you reminded me, because this is a really clever, smart way to make change. And most people naturally would think, I don't want to buy shares in a company that I don't believe in. But
right.
To be able to have a presence at their shareholder meeting where people who aren't normally thinking about some of the issues that we think about, you have their attention.
Absolutely.
That's really a clever way to do it. So if I had a lot more money.
And I know that's what everyone says, but you're right, like $2,000 you can get. And that's why with the funds, if there's something that, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, if anybody comes across something that they think, what about this, what about that, I don't mind being that person to see, why don't we try this, why don't we try that. Personally, and I wouldn't advocate this for anybody else, but I started buying small shares in the food companies, and you probably know this, but I was saddened to see that most of the companies that I buy from. I was saddened to see that most of the companies that I buy from are either private, which
yeah.
is fine. That means we can't buy it
right.
ourselves, or it's been taken over by a huge conglomerate.
That we don't
so
like.
My,
yeah.
Right. So my new approach is I've been emailing the huge conglomerate to say, why don't you capitalize on this part of your segment, because they're acknowledging that it's going somewhere. And I'll think of Silk Milk. I mean, that's one that comes to mind. But, you know, they were taken over by Dean Foods.
Yeah.
So this huge dairy company now owns Silk. But it's not because they feel, like you said, warm and fuzzy about it. Because they know that it's a segment of the market that's growing. And they want to be part of it. So.
Yeah. And they I remember, too, that they were getting Silk, for a short time, wasn't getting organic soybeans, or they were getting them for China, or something happened, and a lot of their customers really complained, and so
yes.
they changed. Yeah. Anyway, are there specific companies that we should be investing in?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that there's any unless you already have some that you don't necessarily feel good about. I mention that only because with PETA in particular, they had a list of companies, of bad companies, that they put out there. They said if anyone already owns them, they weren't advocating to buy these shares, but they said if we already have them, let us know. And I have a client that did contact them, and they were great about saying, okay, that particular company we already own, but they were trying to do shareholder advocacy without having to buy more shares of bad companies.
Okay, so Brenda, do you have a website? Or do you want to direct this to your Facebook page or both?
Yeah, either way, the Humane, hopefully, I don't know if you had any trouble with it, but if it's Humane Investing in the Facebook page, and then mine is BrendaVeggie.com.
Brenda
and I mean it. Yeah, Brenda Veggie. And I mean it when I say if anybody has questions, just let me know. I'm not going to charge somebody to answer a question about a Roth IRA. I want people to be able to take responsibility for the future, and I want them to have money and feel good about it without getting bad advice from bad people.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. Well, let's just put this out to the universe that we want vegan portfolios, vegan funds.
Yes, absolutely. Tell your advisor, because that's how change happens. Tell
that's
everybody.
That's right. Thank you, Brenda. Thank you for joining me today. This was really interesting.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor.
Okay. Well, go out and do good things.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for joining me, Brenda Morris, the Brenda Veggie, and check out her website. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food and ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. Please like us on Facebook. We've got 615 likes, and I really would like to see 1,000 sometime soon, so help us out there. Great. Well, I think that's the end of the hour. Next week, we're going to be talking about mushrooms for health and longevity with Ken Bobble. So join us. Have a delicious week. Bye-bye.